With the impeachment hearings underway, things are getting weird in Washington. Cable news pundits and conservatives are discouraging people from paying attention, saying it's all boring, yet at the same time, calling it a circus.
And wherever there's a circus, there's gotta be clowns. Enter drag queen Pissy Miles, who put a little pizzazz into politics by covering the hearings in full drag for the Haps News Channel. At over 6 feet tall with big hair and heels, the red sequin-clad Jersey Queen caused quite a sensation when she went through security to talk to the nation's representatives.
Today, award-winning drag queen Pissy Miles joins us to talk about her experience becoming the impeachment queen and how Lady Bunny is getting drag queens involved in progressive politics.
Plus, just hours after saying they wouldn't donate any more money to hate groups, Chick-fil-A's president, Tim Tassopoulos, says it's entirely possible that anti-gay groups could receive money from the corporation in the future.
Star Trek's George Takei endorses centrist Democrat Pete Buttigieg. Oh my.
And actress Missy Pyles is featured in a new documentary about the making of the cult classic film Galaxy Quest.
By the hammer of Grabthar, I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello.
Hi, is this Pissy Miles?
The one and only. Is this Fausto Fernos?
Why, yes.
And Mark Fillion, how are you?
How lucky am I? And Mark, are you there too?
I am. I decided to make a cameo today.
Oh, how lovely.
She can't be bothered.
Generous of you to donate your time to me. How are you
I'm
doing?
I'm here almost every day.
Almost, yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Are we recording at the moment?
Yes. This is live. It's not really live. It's simulated live.
Simulated live. I love that. I'm actually packing at the moment. I'm getting ready to leave to go do another little event that I can't really talk about at the moment, but you'll find out very, very soon what it is.
Like within the next day?
The next few days, yeah.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing that.
I got a secret and you don't know it.
I just wanted you to understand why if I was like muffled or it sounded like I was folding laundry. You're like, oh, now I understand.
That sounds like you're putting hip pads into a luggage case. What's
My
happening?
Goodness. It's a lot of hip pads, darling. Let me tell you, she's a big woman.
Well, Pissy, you've gotten the attention of the world for showing up in full drag to the impeachment hearings in Washington, D.C. You went to Capitol Hill at the Longworth House office building where everything's happening for the social media streaming channel Haps News.
Which, by the way, I did not know was a place. Like, I just thought they were like, where are you going? I was like, Congress. And I just thought that was like a place. I was like, oh, we're going to Congress. And they're like, no, you're going to the Longworth building. Pissy Miles, get your life together.
I didn't know either.
It just seems just like the random drag queen just showed up kind of like she was lost. Like, I knew I should have taken a left turn at Albuquerque.
Yeah, basically.
And you went to cover this impeachment stuff for Haps News, a video streaming app.
Essentially, they have called it the first open source news broadcasting app. And so it allows people to participate in the news that's happening right in front of them. And often I was invited as a contributor by the app. I'm still a little unclear on how it works as far as the general public contributing, but that's something I'll definitely talk to Jack, who is the political director who hired me. He's the political director of Haps.
But they put you on an airplane. You don't live in Washington, D.C. You went over there and they stuck you. They plopped you down in the middle of all this stuff. And everybody went, who is that beautiful woman?
It was like I felt like Dorothy and Oz. I was like, it just was this giant whirlwind. And one day I woke up and I was like, oh, everything's in color. It was so strange. It was a really strange experience, but it was very rewarding. And I really enjoyed doing it. So I really don't have a bad thing to say about it.
Well, you're like, you become a Trump supporter. It was so good.
Exactly. I will be supporting the Trump administration with unequivocal force. I'm absolutely kidding. For those of you who are listening, I am definitely not a Trump supporter. I was actually just before you called listening to the impeachment hearings. And I don't know if you guys have been following it much at all, but it's funny because the Republicans keep calling it a circus. And I'm like, guys, do you realize you're the ringleaders? Did you know that that was a thing?
Mm-hmm. For hey, sure. Listen, if you pack the house with clowns, why would you not expect a circus?
Exactly. And that was what killed me when I showed up at the Longworth building, there were people calling it quote unquote a circus. And I think that that stems a lot from a lot of the Republican congressmen using that term to describe the hearings in general. But I was like, guys, if you didn't think this was a circus before I got here, you really have not been paying attention. It is insane. It's insane what they're doing, and it really makes me nuts. Nunez is a crazy person. Jordan is nuts. It's like you can't even make sense of what they're talking about.
They're just terrible people.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, Jim Jordan covered up allegations, you know, of rape for years. Yeah.
At the very least, they're terrible Congress representatives. Like they're terrible representatives. I don't know any of them personally, and I can't say that I'm planning any dinners. But it's so insane to me. I really can't make heads or tails of it.
What was the reaction from people, like the security people, when you came in? Were they just like, did they pat you down? Were they like, what's going on here? I mean, you had Congress people looking at you. I'm sure some of them were like, what is happening?
It was.
Which bathroom did you use? I mean,
every Republican senator's bathroom. I think.
You are a dick pig. That's what Lady Bunny told me.
Don't listen to a thing Lady Bunny tells you. She's crazy. She's delusional. She has dementia.
Mm-hmm.
It was nuts. I mean, I walked in, and I don't think I was what they were expecting to see that day. So I'm the idiot who like really did not think twice about this. I did not think that it would be that big a deal that I was walking in. To me, it was like, oh, you've been hired by HAPS to go and report, and that's it. You're just going to work. And so, like any entertainer, they gave me a call time, and I was like, okay, I'll be there. And, you know, I'm a very political person anyway. And so I showed up, and I got out of my car, and immediately every camera on the steps of the Longworth building panned to me. And I was like, oh, this is probably a bigger deal for them than I had thought, because you forget as a queer person that drag is not a part of everyone's daily life. And so
drag queens and their fans do somewhat live in a bit of a bubble, don't they, in that respect?
It's really like it didn't occur to me until this moment, like that there was a possibility that I would be considered strange or out of place in Congress.
So were you surprised to be the only drag queen there?
I was the only one who was hired by HAPS. I don't know if anyone else was planning on going.
So you ran into other drag queens?
No, I didn't see a single one. I was actually, in retrospect, I'm a bit surprised. I'm surprised more drag queens didn't show up.
Oh, I'm sure there's lots of drag queens like, ooh, why didn't I do that?
And I've gotten a lot of those messages. They're like, this is a genius idea. And I'm like, it wasn't my idea. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. It was like,
that's why it was genius.
I know, it really was just, it was such a chance thing. Jack, who I mentioned as the political director, uh-huh, came to my show at Barracuda in New York City, and he saw me and Sherry Pie. We were there doing our show that we do every Sunday. It's called Pigs in a Blanket. And he came up to me after the show, and he said, I think you're really funny. Are you political? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty, I've listened to NPR in the car. And he was like, I'd really like to bring you down to Washington, D.C. as a political reporter for the impeachment hearings. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And he gave me his card, and I gave him mine. And I was like, I'm never going to hear from this guy again, because anyone who works in nightlife knows, you know, somebody hands you their card in a club and you're like, yeah, this person's going to go home. And when they come down, they'll have forgotten entirely about me. So the next day he contacted me, and I was like, oh, he was serious. And it really happened. And I couldn't have been more shocked.
considering so much misinformation and spectacle is being done to discourage people from paying attention to the impeachment hearings, do you think they're being successful? Do you think the impeachment hearings are having an impact in changing hearts and minds?
That's a tough one. I think the problem is not that the information is disinteresting. The problem is that it goes on for way too long. It's like when you see a drag number that's like 8 minutes long, and the first 4 minutes you're like, yeah, this is great. And then you hit minute five and you're like, okay, it should be wrapping up any minute. And then you're at minute six and you're like, dear God, somebody get the cane, like get this bitch off the stage. And I think that's the problem. It goes on for so long. I think it's hard to keep people interested in the testimony, but the testimony is, in my opinion, very significant. And I think that there's definitely enough to move forward with an impeachment, especially since you have people like Roger Stone who are being convicted on almost nothing but hearsay evidence, which is, it's like, how can Roger Stone be convicted of hearsay evidence and somehow the president's hearsay evidence just doesn't count? And it really just comes down to party loyalty.
Where are those photos of Roger Stone shirtless with the drag queen coming from? That's not Photoshop. He's bisexual.
He's a bisexual swinger. No. He's a trisexual, he said. And that's part of the reason why he was involved in Bob Dole's campaign, but he had to drop out because of some allegations of, you know, he and his wife, and they were swingers and having sex with all sorts of people.
There's footage of Roger Stone on the documentary Get Me Roger Stone on Netflix, where he takes his shirt off and shows you he has a big tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
And I think if Democrats really want people to pay attention to it, they have to turn the impeachment hearings into the Real Housewives franchise. Andy Cohen, it's time to save America.
Or maybe Pissy Miles. Maybe that's what we need. We need a drag queen to be like, hey, guys, look over here.
Yeah, hey, have some more wine. And the way that Trump likes to start scandals by intimidating witnesses, like he did during the testimony of Marie Yovanovitch. While she's testifying, Trump is on Twitter intimidating her.
The whole reason she was called to testify is that she was basically saying, I was made to feel intimidated by this administration. And then as she's tweeting, As she's testifying, he's committing suppression. It's like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And they don't care. They don't care about any of it. It really boggles my mind.
Well, Americans are notorious for being temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Drag queens today are temporarily embarrassed Rue Girls into the future. And right now, we're temporarily set back by a dictatorship that has taken over our government. Are we deluding ourselves into thinking that we have any ability to fight back against this dictatorship that the Republicans have thrusted upon us?
I don't think so. I think that right now, the most important thing people can do is to stay politically informed and to go out and vote in 2020. Because in my opinion, that's kind of the biggest problem we had in 2016, is that basically all of the news outlets made Trump seem like a joke. And so everyone thought, well, Hillary's got this in the bag. My vote doesn't matter. And it turned out to be, oh, your vote absolutely does matter. Even if it doesn't seem like it, every vote counts. Because if everyone felt that way, then none of the votes would be cast. And that's basically what happened in 2016.
How many people, what was it? Bush won Florida by a few hundred votes.
And that settled the election.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's because of this, you know, we have witness suppression happening from the president, but we also have voter suppression happening just generally from the Republican Party, where they're disenfranchising people of color and queer people and basically anyone who's not middle class white conservative or above. They're trying to find ways to make these votes matter less, and especially with what's it called? Redistricting and doing all that. So it does not surprise me what's going on, but it doesn't cease to amaze me.
In the early days of the podcast, Mark and I went to Springfield, to the state capital in Springfield, Illinois, to interview mm-hmm. people who are lobbying. What was interesting was before the age of cell phones and social media, was the hostility that we faced from security guards and conservatives that we were there with electronic devices that could record people, could photograph and record people's audio. And I'm wondering, in your assessment as a drag queen, as a very visible queer person in a very intimidating space with a recording device, were you intimidated or set back by anybody?
It is a very intimidating space in to be for anyone, I think. You know, there's so much security and the weight of the situation is not lost on anyone who's there. So, it's intimidating because there's a lot of security and they're all really trying very hard to keep some kind of order. And so there were a lot of times where we would be broadcasting or talking to people in the hallway outside the hearing rooms, and they would ask us to move or to stop recording where we were recording and to move to a designated area. But I never felt like it was because I was a queer person. I just felt like it was because I was doing something I didn't know better not to do. So they were all very kind to me, and especially going through security, I say constantly that getting patted down was the best part of my day.
Consensually.
Yeah, consensually patted down, wanded even. It was a lot of fun. I'd do it again.
Do you feel like you've sort of been had greatness thrust upon you? RuPaul tweeted this: when the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know Pissy Miles.
It's such a surreal thing to have someone say something like that about you, because I think anyone imagines that they would do great or meaningful things. And it's not lost on me that what I did was meaningful. And that was absolutely my intention of going, was to represent the queer community and to represent marginalized people. But it's still surreal to me when people come up to my show, to me after my show or before my show, and they want to say how much what I did meant to them. And I'm like, but I'm just Pissy Miles. I'm a local queen. I'm nobody. But I guess to somebody, I'm somebody. And that's a very strange thing.
Well, now you're in the national spotlight and
yeah, you stole the show.
Yeah.
although I have to say Representative Eric Swalwell is coming after your gig. Did you hear him on NBC?
No.
MSNBC here. Let me play you a little bit of it. Hold on right now.
Chris, so far, the evidence is uncontradicted that the president used taxpayer dollars to ask the Ukrainians to help him cheat an election. And the complaint... No.
Did you hear that? It's called Fartgate. He said he didn't even hear it.
Him farting?
They actually say now that it was actually what you hear is a coffee mug scraping across a desk.
Oh, that is a lie. I have scraped many coffee mugs, and that was not a coffee mug.
He's saying he was totally exonerated. Hardball said, sorry to disappoint the conspiracy theorists. It was the hashtag Hardball mug scraping across the desk. Get yours today.
They're trying to profit off of his farts?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't, you know, he's got a straight face on when he farts, so it's not like he's like, oop, who did that?
We'll see if the other way around. He's felt it, dealt it. Catch him at a gay bar later.
he's got that look. He
does. All of them do.
Do they?
Every Republican is probably a closet homosexual.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people like you. For the past 15 years, our microphones, hard drives, mixers, and cables have fearlessly been recording podcasts with thousands of legendary LGBTQ artists. Right now, we need your help to save Feast of Fun. Two of our microphones are broken, our equipment and our website have had it, and are in urgent need of repairs in order to continue. Plus, we'd like to bring back our special forums for listeners and guests of the show, a truly fun place to chat without fear of having their privacy compromised or exposing themselves to Facebook. This holiday season, please consider stuffing your stocking with Feast of Fun. Go to GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun and pledge any amount today. Thank you. last time I was at the Capitol walking around, or the first time I was there, I really spent some time there. It was like, I just noticed like the look on everyone's face. They all looked constipated. They all just looked like they needed to take a shit really, really bad. Just relax.
And everybody looks like they probably haven't done it in a while because they're so tight-ass that they couldn't. It's insane. And when you see them walking around the halls in the Longworth building, and I don't mean to demean everybody. Obviously, I'm sure. making light of a very serious situation. Everybody just looks like it is life or death that they get to the Dunkin' Donuts in the basement. It's nuts. Everything is vital. Every single thing they do is vital. And it's very entertaining to watch, I'll be honest. Mm.
That's why I think, you know, someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's very progressive, obviously, but also very engaged in popular culture, in social media, and making things exciting for people again. I think one of the strategies that oligarchs, conservatives, fascists have done is to try to get us to be bored by politics or to feel that, you know, both sides are the same, that there's nothing really you can do, that this dictatorship that we're dealing with is something that's going to continue for the rest of our lives, that we can't take action. And, you know, drag queens historically, until RuPaul's Drag Race came along, were instigators. You know, you look at the way drag was used at the height of the AIDS crisis in New York City in the 1980s. You know, drag has always sort of been at the forefront of our political disobedience and revolutions. How do we get people to take action, not just to register to vote, but actually to campaign, to protest, to go to Washington in heels, and not just you, but thousands of drag queens?
Well, that's kind of my hope in doing what I'm doing at the moment, is that people can see, you know, oh, you don't have to be a Ru girl to have a significant impact. You can put on drag and walk outside any day at any time and do what you're going to do and use it as commentary. And you can still be an entertainer. I mean, I am an entertainer before anything else. I am politically savvy, but I am not a trained journalist. So using my drag to help me make a commentary is exactly what I was going for in this situation. And you can see now the impact that something like that can have. So my hope is that a lot more drag queens will start to see themselves not just as entertainers or potential, like you said, future Ru girls, but as community leaders and as people who will impact their community.
But you know, since all it takes is a wig and some lipstick to be a community, it takes a lot
mostly,
more.
Yeah.
I wish more drag queens were involved in politics and civil disobedience. Unfortunately, it's a rarity.
Yeah, I will say that it can be a bit frustrating when I see inexperienced queens not really realizing that that's part of the game. But I get it. I mean, we've all been there, and we've all been trying to figure out what we're doing with ourselves. So my hope is that they will come to realize that there is a much bigger part of this job than just showing up and looking good and dancing the night away. There's also a very political aspect of drag. There's just walking outside looking the way we do puts a target on your back. And you have a very unique opportunity to be the kind of person who will say, I'm going to go out and show up for everybody, not just myself. And I hope that this inspires more people to do that.
What's going on with Valerie Jarrett responding to Republicans' claims of sabotage?
So White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham claims Obama aides left "you will fail" notes in offices for Trump aides. "We came into the White House. I'll tell you something. Every office was filled with Obama books, and we had notes left behind that said, 'You will fail. You aren't going to make it.'" And so
as far as I'm concerned, that's hearsay and it's irrelevant.
Well, Valerie Jarrett's like, look at my, she's tweeting out photos. Look at my completely empty office. And everybody else is twittering like, show me the receipts. And Valerie Jarrett's just like, produce the notes that back this up. I cannot imagine a single one of my former colleagues who would do this. From Barack Obama on down, we all tried to help facilitate a smooth and orderly transition.
For real. I have a hard time believing it. And this is something I've really struggled with, is trying to find a way to reach moderate Republicans who I think can be made to realize how much of the circus is coming from that side of the aisle. Mm. Because it's like, how do you point out to someone, these people are feeding you some real nonsense? How do you point out to someone, it's strange that they have all these stories that they can't back up, but then when one comes about that's actually really relevant, suddenly hearsay doesn't matter. Suddenly hearsay is irrelevant. It's so, oh God.
Hypocrisy, mendacity.
What would you say to like Miami drag queen Elaine Lancaster, who's a hardcore supporter of Trump and continues to be so, and amazingly still has a drag career despite her being a hardcore Tea Partier, right wing Trump supporter?
You know what? I would say to her, I wonder if she would still feel that way if she had had the experience that I had in the Capitol, which is that none of the Republican representatives even wanted to talk to me. They weren't outwardly rude, but if I came up to them, they would say, "We don't have anything to say, thank you." And I had staffers from Nancy Pelosi's office coming up to take pictures with me and telling me how glad they were that I was there. I had one of your representatives, one of your congresswomen, came up to me and took a picture with me, one of the congresswomen from Chicago. And ooh, no Republicans.
I think it was Jan Schakowsky.
Jan Schakowsky?
Yeah, she's great. Schakowsky. Yeah. She was really, really lovely, and she came up to say hello to me and to take a picture. And I was very, very appreciative, but none of the Republicans wanted anything to do with me, much less Mark Meadows, who literally ran screaming from me.
Your husband, the artist and photographer David Ayon, you guys work together.
We do, yeah.
He told me that you encountered a group of DACA students who were there for a DACA hearing.
I did. It was actually probably one of the most influential moments of that day for me, because my husband is Cuban. My husband's David Ayon. His family is Cuban. And of course, he and his family members were born in this country. But we know so many people who are undocumented immigrants. And we know people who have friends who are undocumented immigrants, or people who are dreamers, or people who are DACA recipients. And all of these things are different in subtle ways. But what it comes down to is that the narrative regarding immigration in this country right now is so repulsive, and it goes against everything that this country is built upon. This country was supposed to be a melting pot, and that melting pot can't be one color. It's really ridiculous.
So what goes through your mind when you see like immigrants who have not committed any crimes whatsoever, immigrating to the United States without documentation is not a crime. And they're putting them in ICE jails and separating parents from their kids. And we don't even know if some of these people are still alive. Some people are speculating they're mass graves, that we literally have concentration camps and to some degree, murder of innocent people by our government in our hands.
And that's something that I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten about, because it's no longer in the headlines, is that there are still thousands of undocumented children who are unaccounted for. The government just doesn't know where they are. And to think how horrifying it is that not only were they separated from their family at the border, and for what purpose other than to punish these people, to think that these children have been lost, essentially, and that they could potentially have been put into child sex rings or any other abusive situation is just unfathomable. And there's no way of finding out exactly what happened to them or where they are. And that is horrifying. And it's something that people need to be talking more about. And it's something that the Trump administration needs to take responsibility for, because what the narrative they have created is that these people are criminals, but being an undocumented immigrant is not even a felony. It's I believe, a misdemeanor. It's not even such a severe crime that you can be jailed for a long period for it. And it's something that people need to be talking more about. And I think that people should be asking questions about what happened to these children and what the government is going to do about it.
I want to ask you about the children in your family, because you're one of five kids and four of those kids are gay.
I know. Not me. The other four. The other four. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe my dad's shooting glitter. We can't speculate. It's all speculative information, but I'm one of five kids, like you said, and of the five of us, four of us are gay. The only one who's not is my oldest sister, Jessica. And it's actually how my sister Sam and I, Sam, who is my older sister, Jessica is my oldest sister. She's the straight one. And then my older sister, Sam, is married to her wife, Sarah. And then there's me and David. And then I have two younger brothers, Bob and Kevin, who are both gay as well and proud. And so my sister, Sam, and I are both comedians and humorists, and we both write, and we're very, very into horror movies and the horror lexicon. So we started a podcast called My Spooky Gay Family, where we talk about everything related to being horror fans and being part of such a big, gay, funny family. So it's a really cool experience.
So what was the coming out process like? Was it just like you were at the dinner table? You're like, I'm gay too.
Me too.
I wish I could say that that was what it was like. Mm-hmm. My sister Sam came out first. And I don't think that was a big shock to anyone. I mean, she wore Doc Martens. Nobody was like throwing themselves on the floor asking why me, God. But I think when I came out, again, it wasn't a huge surprise. I was a little kid who wanted nothing but to be a musical theater star. I basically wanted to be Patti LuPone. So I know. I hope that my dad wasn't shocked, but when I came out to him, it was with a letter that I left on his bed, because he got home later every day from work. My parents were divorced, and I left a letter on his bed basically saying, you know, Dad, I'm still me. Nothing has changed. Nothing is different. And he came home and he went in his room and closed the door, and I was sitting on the couch, and he was in there for quite a while. And then he came out and he sat down on the couch next to me, and I didn't look up. I was so nervous. And he just said to me, "There's a lot of diseases out there. Be careful." And that was like
he was a big pig.
Apparently, he knew early on that he should be telling me to use protection.
So was it easier then for your younger brothers to come out?
You know, I don't really know much about their coming out process. I know that at some point, It must have come up, because none of us are in the closet anymore. But I figure after your two older siblings come out, it's like, well, might have skin to the wind. Let's just do this.
Why do you think queer people are so into horror?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think it's because, there's a lot of camp in horror, and gay people are drawn to camp, because I think that, especially because of what has happened in queer history, we've had such dark situations to work through. We've had to develop a kind of dark sense of humor.
So we're like the Addams Family perpetually.
Sort of, yeah, which is probably one of the gayest families in existence.
Yeah.
I mean, Grandmama is a queer icon as far as I'm concerned. Morticia Adams. Every drag queen wants to be Morticia Adams. We're all looking for our Gomez.
I have my Gomez right here.
I do too. I'm very lucky. Mon cher.
Your drag inspiration is more Thing, or the one with the hair. In the hat, wasn't there, that goes, you know what I'm talking about?
What?
Cousin, God, I'm blanking out.
It.
Harry Cousin Adams.
Oh.
Yeah.
It. Oh, cousin yeah. Adam. I've got a few cousin its in my family. I think any Italian family does.
What about Patti LuPone and the musical Evita? Because I think that musical inspired so many drag queens. It inspired me.
Including Patti LuPone.
And Patti LuPone. And what's interesting, a lot of drag, like that whole musical is like right-wing propaganda against Evita.
Evita was, Evita was a hero because of what she represented to the Argentinian people. But generally speaking, it was a very divisive subject. It's kind of surprising that the history didn't make more of an impact on the theater community, the history of what happened in Buenos Aires.
Well, I just want to lay this upon you because I just found about it recently, is that Eva Perón was murdered by allegedly murdered by her husband, Juan Perón, because she had become such an inflammatory revolutionary figure.
And the resistance looked up to her, and I can't imagine that he was very excited about that.
No, he was a fascist.
I don't know
if this is just like revisionist history and trying to sort of embrace this goddess figure in Argentinian mm-hmm. culture. Or is that, Evita Perón became kind of sort of, in the way like Hillary Clinton became the more conservative version of her husband, political ambitions, Eva Perón became the more progressive or more radical political equivalent of her husband's ambitions. And so for her having ovarian cancer, she was one of the first people in history to actually go through chemotherapy. And in order to the doctor said, if we do a lobotomy, the pain, it won't hurt so much.
My dad said the same thing when I came out.
And I was just like, I was kind of blown away by that. Do you buy that conspiracy theory that she may have been allegedly assassinated by her husband in order to quench her political thirsts at the end of her life?
I mean, that's a hard one to prove. I if you told me it was proven true, I'd be like, okay, I see it. But until then, I'm like, well, he didn't give her ovarian cancer. My God.
Well, I mean, her body anyway. was just like Lennon's body. It was kind of embalmed and fetishized and put on display and stolen.
Well, and she went missing for
he carried
long time.
It around for 13 years or something like
and
that.
And then it got stolen.
Yeah. She was stolen and she was buried. I can't remember where it is in Europe. That she her body was, and only in the very recent past mm-hmm. was her body discovered. There was one person who knew where she was, and they finally admitted where she was, and she was exhumed and brought back to Argentina. And it really is like a crazy story. So maybe she was, maybe he poisoned her, gave her a lobotomy, who knows.
Coming up on November 26th, they're having a showing of Never Surrender, a Galaxy Quest documentary, which propelled star Missy Pyles.
Missy Pyle, yeah.
That was her first big role. And you're kind of named after her, but I also heard you say, like, well, not really, kind of.
It's kind of a crazy little story. I was basically, when I was first starting drag, I came up with a bunch of different drag names, and my husband nixed all of them. He was like, no, it's boring. I don't like that. You could do better. And finally, one Christmas morning, I had a friend who was producing Missy Pyles' show, a cabaret show for her in New York City at Joe's Pub. And so everything I heard was Missy Pyle this and Missy Pyle that. And I did love Missy Pyle. And I went to see the show. It was terrific. But Christmas morning, we were driving to my sister's for celebrations, and my husband was like, can we please turn off the Christmas music? And I love Christmas music. And I was like, it's fucking Christmas. I'm not turning off the Christmas music. And so we got into like a little bit of a spat, and he was like, he knew he would get my goat if he was like, do you want to talk about your drag name? And I was like, you know what? You're turning me into Pissy Miles in a minute. And it just kind of stuck.
I had no idea she was a cabaret artist.
Well, she's a singer. It was more of a concert cabaret. It's hard to describe.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the actress Missy Pyles.
Yes,
Missy Pyle, okay. who is actually right now she's working in she's doing a lot of TV and film work. She was just in, not that long ago, I mean, it was a little while ago, she was in Gone Girl. She played the Nancy Grace character in Gone Girl, which was probably one of my favorite parts I've seen her in. And I loved her in Dodgeball. She was mm-hmm. the, like, scary Slovenian woman.
mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's hard to, like, put two and two together because she's mostly a blonde most of the time. And in Galaxy Quest, she's a brunette. Uh-huh.
Yeah, in Galaxy Quest, she's a brunette. In Dodgeball, she's a brunette. And in in person, she's actually a really beautiful woman and very funny and very talented. She's very intelligent. I can't say enough nice things about Missy Pyle. But
what kind of relationship do you have with her?
Well, she had become aware of me through a mutual friend of ours. Bob the Drag Queen had kind of mentioned to her. He met her at, I don't even remember what it was. He met her and he was like, "Oh, did you know there's a drag queen named after you?" And she was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, Pissy Miles." And then sure enough, like the more people I met, the more people, she has ties to all of these people in the theater and drag community. She knows Tempest Du Jour, apparently. Mm. They worked together at one point. And so when I met Tempest, Tempest was like, "Oh my God, I know Missy Pyle." And I was like, it was just like over and over. My life was just people coming up to me and being like, "Oh my God, I know Missy Pyle." And then one day, I don't remember exactly how it happened. She messaged me on social media and struck up a conversation, and she was so, so sweet. And
aww.
She has been nothing but sweet to me. And we've actually been talking a lot recently. After everything that happened in the Capitol, she was very, very proud and happy for me. So
it was really sweet.
Yeah.
Aww.
That's so wonderful that, you know, to be able to have that kind of connection with an actor who inspired you so much.
Exactly. And, you know, very rarely do you meet people who you admire or in some cases idolize. Like, very rarely when you meet them, are you glad you did? I find because, you know, they meet so many people and so they definitely have their guard up, but it can be very challenging to meet the people you love because you never know what they're going to be like in person. And I can say unequivocally that Missy Pyle was nothing but sweet and wonderful.
For somebody who's never seen your drag act before, what is your drag act like?
I always say Pissy Miles is fat, funny, and fabulous. She's,
all the Fs.
all of the Fs. I don't, you know, I try not to take anything too seriously. I make light of basically anything I can. My goal is always to make sure that everybody leaves having had a good time. And most often, I find that's the case. Mm-hmm. Most often.
Chick-fil-A, I think, was just a couple days ago announced that they will no longer be supporting bigoted groups in their donation.
At this point in time,
a few hours later, and everyone's like, "I'm going to eat at Chick-fil-A to show my support." And I'm like, you know, this corporation gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to make sure that LGBTQ people in Uganda were given the death penalty.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of damage to people all around the world in their so-called, by supporting hate groups.
Yeah.
Then a couple hours after making that announcement, the Christian-owned restaurant chain said it would be changing how it gives money to charity by not committing that they would, in the future, rule out supporting hate groups like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes or the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
Yeah. And part of it is like, and part of it is like, you know, as LGBTQ people, we're very marginalized. We're the middle children of society to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very eager to forgive an organization that for years have harmed people all around the world. Yet we're so quick to dismiss one of our own for the slightest disagreement. And it's really sort of become very obvious to me on social media. Yeah. In people deliberating and examining their love or hate for Chick-fil-A's food or politics.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you grow up sort of facing some amount of abuse, you learn how to cope with it and how to forgive people, because if you didn't, you'd feel so lonely. And then you grow up and you find that there are other people like you and you don't have to just keep forgiving everyone. And that is the freedom we all find ourselves in now, is that especially with, excuse me, the internet, you have the opportunity to meet people who are like you far earlier in your life. And so I think that's one of the wonderful things about, queer presences online, but it's one of the things that I always say to people, you know, don't be so quick. I don't want to say don't be so quick to forgive people, but make sure that what you're getting, especially when it's a corporate apology, it's like, they'll say whatever they need to say to get your dollar. It actions speak much louder than words. Find out, are they still donating money under anonymous names? Are they still, how is this money going to benefit these hate groups? Because you know that a company like this that's been running for decades and has made a commitment to furthering these awful, awful organizations is not going to just stop to make a dollar off the gay community.
Well, and also, please consider that these are franchises. So this is the main corporate office that was doing this, but also to each individual franchise owner. Many of them own like one Chick-fil-A, or some of them own multiple, like a lot of franchises. And so these people, a lot of times, to become a franchise owner, you kind of have to show that you're a good Christian person. And so they typically kind of weed out anybody. Like Fausto and I would never be able to open up a Chick-fil-A. They'd be looking at us and be like, no. And so who knows where those people are funneling their money,
They're like, are you more interested in a breast or a thigh? What appeals to you more, Fausto? I agree. And honestly, I'm kind of the opinion where it's like, well, I can't tell a franchisee what to do if I found out that a local franchise of a restaurant I was eating at was donating money, I wouldn't eat there anymore. But if it's the corporate office, that it's getting that money from every franchise. So
what about undoing the damage they've done? Like, this is one thing I don't see or hear being discussed is like, okay, so they're willing to change. Definitely boycotts do work, but how are they going to undo the damage they've done for decades?
Well, and that was the point I think you made very well before is that like, it's great that you're not donating that money anymore, but you've already done so much damage. What are you going to do to prove that you've changed your ideology, which is really more what we're interested in, is, are you going to donate money to pro-LGBTU groups? Are you going to donate money to an HIV research fund? Are you going to donate money to support trans women of color? Are you going to do anything that you can to support an LGBTQ organization? And the answer is probably no.
Probably not. Now, Pissy, you are located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, but you're what is known as a tri-state queen.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I live in New Jersey. My husband and I live in New Jersey. I used to work in Philly, and now I work primarily in New York City. I've bounced around quite a bit. I'm like my own little game of ping pong.
So how long does it take you to get from your home to the club in New York City when you're dressing up in drag? And are you taking a train or a car?
No, I drive myself. And because I do that, it takes me a little bit less than an hour. Honestly, it takes me sometimes less time to get into the city than it takes someone in like Brooklyn or Queens, depending on how far out they are. And that's people always tease me. They're like, oh, she's from New Jersey. She's from New Jersey. I'm like, well, I got here before you did tonight, bitch. So calm down.
And you have a Christmas show coming up, The Christmas Wish.
I do. The Christmas Wish. I'm producing at a venue called The Triad in New York City. I'm very excited. It's about what happens when two queens try to decide what it is they want for Christmas.
Now, will you be singing your classic, I Saw Daddy Blowing Santa Claus?
I will be singing I Saw Daddy Fucking Santa Claus in the show. That was the big song that everyone walked away from the show with. That's one of my parodies, because that's really what I do as a queen. I'm a parody queen.
Well, God, I mean, so many people have seen that performance especially on Facebook. Second most famous thing you've ever done.
I know, second most famous. I've had a lot of very strange things take off. It's been such a wild ride. Between what's happening right now and I had done a single, I think it was 2 years ago, called Baba Shook, that took off quite a bit and sold a bunch. It's been nuts.
That's when the Babadook became the gay icon.
Yes, she was out there flouncing and trouncing and living her gay life.
Because this was like a horror film that Netflix by mistake put in the LGBTQ genre, and people reacted and said, oh, it's because the monster in the movie, Babadook, is queer.
Yeah, basically another tie to gay horror.
Is there anything gay in the Babadook movie?
I mean, not as far as I can tell. I don't think there's anything gay in it.
Because, like, drag queens were dressing up as the Babadook, which I just, I was like, okay, girls, calm down. This meme's gone a little far.
I know, but you know how the girls get when something entertains them. You can't tell them no.
Well, the Babadook was kind of like this shadow character, and right? Our sexuality is kind of like this shadow character that we live with in some ways, because it's like, you see us, but, like, we also have this lurking behind us. And, you know, our queer sensibility, our queer sexuality has often been villainized. So I think that's where the attraction comes from.
But that is not in the intention of the filmmakers at all.
I was going to say, that's a very in-depth review you just gave, Mark.
That's like saying the movie Jaws is about sucking cocks.
You know? Well, listen, that's what the Vivacious said. Sure, she says that was her nickname. They called her Jaws because she could devour a cock.
That does not surprise me either, if I'm being honest. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. Although now she says she's been celibate for years.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's a lie. Those are fake news. Fake news. Here, I got my fake fan news. Here. Fake news. So, Lady Bunny, I think, is a very important drag queen, not just because of her contributions with wig stock or into RuPaul's career or into Drag Race history, but in the way that she's talking about politics and getting people to really get very critical on the Democratic establishment and to push for Bernie Sanders and universal healthcare, you know, talk about the influence Lady Bunny has had on you in your politics and as a drag queen.
You know, I first met Bunny back in, I think I met her in 2015. I had booked her to come down to do a show in Philly with me. And it was right around the time Bernie Sanders' campaign was first taking off. And I credit myself, she may not, but I credit myself as being one of the first people to call her Lady Bernie, because she has just, she loves Bernie Sanders. And to be fair, I do too. I like all of the progressive candidates. But I really love so much that she represents exactly what you were talking about before, which is that drag queens should be voices for the community on staying informed and staying educated, especially when it comes to being political. And I have a lot of respect for Bunny because she's so smart and so well informed. I can't tell you how many times I've been driving home from a show at like 3 or 4 in the morning and my phone rings and it says Lady Bunny. And I pick up the phone. I'm like, hello. And she's like, girl, have you been listening to NPR? And I was like, Bunny, yes, of course I've been listening to NPR. And then we have an hour long conversation about policy, which I never thought would be something part of my life.
Who are you rooting for in the because I think right now in the Democratic primaries is where we decide who the next president of the United States is going to be.
God, I hope so.
And, you know, we're pretty clear that, you know, I'd be comfortable with Warren, but I think Bernie Sanders is somebody who would thrill me personally. There's a lot of sentiment that they're worried that a candidate that's too progressive might not appeal to conservative voters. And I'm like, at right now, if the impeachment hearings is not turning off Republicans from Trump, nothing will.
Yeah, I mean, personally, my own personal views are very similar, where it's like, I'm definitely first and foremost, I really am inspired by Bernie Sanders and the grassroots movement that he created. And so I personally in the primary will be voting for, will most likely be voting for Bernie Sanders, but there are other progressive candidates like Elizabeth Warren. And I don't want to get into the business of bad mouthing the other candidates, because I think that especially someone like Elizabeth Warren has so many merits. And I do think that she's making a commitment to a more progressive campaign. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's important that we support all of the progressive candidates, and that whoever it is, whether it's Bernie or Elizabeth, or if it's Bernie, we support them.
But Pete Buttigieg is certainly doing a number on himself. A video just popped up this week where he's like praising. He's not endorsing the Tea Party a political movement, but he's praising and comparing himself to them. And I'm just kind of like, his political instincts are so wrong. You know, like we've all worked with somebody like Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah,
who's very likable, very cute, very. You know, you just want to hug and kiss him, but then he opens his mouth and you're like, oh, baby, you have a lot of growing up to do.
I know. Poor. It's like I want so desperately to like him because he's the first candidate to be openly gay and in a gay relationship. And that makes me want to like him more than I like his campaign at the moment, because his policies are very, very centrist, and I am just not a centrist person. So I'm like Pete, please. It's like when you turn on the news and they're like, oh, there's been a shooting downtown, and you're like, please God, don't let it be a gay guy. Please God, don't let it be a gay guy. It's like you're like, oh, Pete, please. Why are you doing this?
I don't know. To me, it's like George Takei today just announced his endorsement of Pete Buttigieg. And I'm just kind of really? Like, what are you doing?
Well, when you listen to him talk about it, it almost as though I feel like his endorsement of Pete Buttigieg is really just him trying to shade William Shatner. Because, you know, he's had this beef with William Shatner for a long time. He's like, we need a leader who is like calm and, you know, and nice and smart.
And doesn't sleep with green alien women.
That is entirely possible. Mm-hmm. It is entirely possible he's just shading William Shatner. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of disappointed in George because, like, the first thing that he goes on to talk about, you know, Pete Buttigieg is his military career. And it's just like, you know, George is a person who, as a child, was interned in a concentration camp because of a war. And, you know, it's I would think that he'd be somebody like that would be the thing that he would want, like, at the last thing on the list or somewhere down the line, like maybe education, healthcare, equal rights, those kinds of things. So I don't know. I'm disappointed in George, but you know, I'll get over it.
Welcome to come back on the show and talk about it. Mm. You know, I'd be happy to listen to him. Last time he was on the podcast, he talked about having sex in a gay bathhouse in Indiana. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a
George
sexual.
Yes. Really?
Yes. He, there's this great story. You can listen to it at feastoffun.com. George Takei talks to us about being in the closet while he was filming Star Trek, the motion pictures. And he went to a gay bathhouse in Indiana, and somebody went up to his ear and whispered something that chilled him to the bone and made him run out of the building. But
I actually remember hearing about this.
Yes. So that you can hear the story on the podcast. I don't want to give it away, but that's pretty good.
My goodness, what a life.
You know, and part of it is, I think, people, and I know we have friends who are in support of Pete Buttigieg, and I'm just kind of like, you know, listen to what Lady Bunny has to say about it.
Don't get me wrong. I'm super glad he's running. I'm super glad that we have, you know, gay representation out there. It's just, you know, I'm a person. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I want for is like student debt erased, and I want universal health care. And I don't believe he really supports either of those options. So for me, it's, you know, it's a no-brainer.
And taxing Amazon.com. Last year, they made $11 billion and paid zero in taxes on that profit. That's not what they took in. That's what they profit. They pocketed, and they paid zero. You paid more taxes last year than Jeff Bezos at Amazon.
Well, don't be so sure. I'm still a drag queen.
Hey, girl.
She's like, I pay my taxes.
What tips?
She has it hidden in a chest underneath that mummified body.
Yes, Dorian, Corey.
What do we want for Christmas? Target is selling Golden Girls action figures. So you can buy... Yeah, you could get there. I think the Golden Girls franchise is gearing up for a reboot.
I've heard a lot of talk about that. I've heard that. That
and it's not Sex in the City reboot. It's actual seniors doing comedy.
Oh, no. Well, you have to remember those girls. Most of them were around the age of 50 years old or something, weren't they, when they did the Golden Girls? They weren't that old.
Yeah, they weren't as old as they were made to seem, but it was the 80s. So anyone over 32 was considered elderly.
Mm-hmm. Now it's completely different. You know, Tina Turner, Cher, Madonna, they all just, you know, they just changed the world for everyone. When,
thank goodness.
Yeah, you know, when J-Lo would turn 40, nobody cared. It was like, whatever, she still looks good.
She still looks like she's 29, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Pissy, what are you packing in your suitcase?
What am I packing in my suitcase? Well, I have some very large hip pads, and if that fails, I've also got a bag of McDonald's.
Do you pack your makeup separately in case the luggage gets lost or anything like that?
I actually don't. I have a huge fear because of all of the TSA regulations about like liquids and things. So I pack my makeup in my suitcase because I don't need 16 bags of makeup, one with lipsticks that goes in the suitcase, one with powders that goes in my bag. I'm like, I can't be bothered. So I just stick it all in a suitcase and light a black candle. I'm like, God willing, it'll just get where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. Have you ever lost a luggage or anything like that?
Knock on wood, no. And I'm like, God, I wish I hadn't answered that question on my way to the airport.
Well, break a leg, girl.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I'm glad you guys called. It was a lot of fun.
Congratulations on all your success, and thank you so much for your service at the nation's capital.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
My favorite impeachment queen. Thank you so much. And give our best to David.
I'm the only impeachment queen. My goodness.
Yeah, you know how drag queens are. Somebody else is coming for that gig. Somebody's getting dolled up right now and rolling in there.
I know. Somebody down in that Washington, D.C. area is like, I'll take care of this right quick. Get ready, girl.
Well, certainly Rudy Giuliani dressed up as Marilyn Monroe one time.
He did. He was actually, they called him Ruby Giuliani, and somebody called me that on Twitter, and I was like, how very dare you?
Oh my God.
And you know who he was trying to seduce dressed up as Marilyn Monroe?
The president.
President Trump.
Yes.
And you can watch that on YouTube. I wouldn't be surprised if it worked. He was like, all right, unzips his dick.
Yeah, who knew Giuliani was into golden showers?
Thank you so much, Pissy.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys so much for chatting with me today. And I hope that we can do it again soon.
Yeah, course, come back anytime.
Thank you, Pissy.
I'd love it.
If you're in Chicago, let's have some fun, hun.
I would love that. I'll let you know if I'm ever in town. We're planning a lot of out of town gigs at the moment.
Plan an extra day and come get busy with us.
I would love that. Thank you so much,
cook
guys.
Cook something spicy.
Beautiful. I like spice.
Bye,
sugar,
love.
And spice.
Bye.
Goodbye. Nice to talk to you.
Pissy Miles lives in Ashbury Park, New Jersey. Check her out at pissymiles.com. Although she's active in the tri-state area.
She's a tri-state queen for sure.
What states are those?
That would be Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and
New York.
Yeah. There you go.
Isn't the tri-state Connecticut, New York,
and
New Jersey?
That's also a tri-state area as well.
So they're like... Like the three states come together?
It depends on what tri-state you're talking about.
Or the quad cities.
Any place where three states come together, that's a tri-state area.
I learned about geography. Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your generous support. Right now, we need your help. Our microphones are about to blow up. Our mixer boards, three of the channels that we use are no longer working. Our external processor that we compress the audio so you can hear it nice and loud is also damaged, and many of the cables that we connect everything to need to be replaced. We are counting on your help also to upgrade our website, feastoffun.com, where that hosts all the audio and provides the podcast feed that you listen to. Go to gofundme.com/savefeastoffun. And consider making a one-time pledge, a donation, to save your favorite podcast, Feast of Fun. We're going to do a shout-out to Kai Contreras, Federico Gasparri, Thomas Daniels, Rick Garcia, the activist Rick Garcia.
Thank you, Rick.
And many other wonderful people, certainly who have made this show possible today and in the past.
Again, that's GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun. And we really can't do this podcast without your support. And it's a really, we're in a moment of need here. So this is really, at this point in time, the best way to support the podcast is to go to GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun.
And one thing I'd also like to do is to bring back our special forums that we used to have for listeners and guests of the show. A truly fun place to chat without having to worry about your privacy being compromised by a social media place like Facebook. Mm-hmm. We value your privacy. We do not share nor sell your information to anybody. So this holiday season, go to GoFundMe.com/SaveFeastOfFun. Today, we have raised $680.
Yay!
Can we get to 1,000 by the end of the week?
Let's do it.
Let's do it, honey. Yes, we can. Or backwards?
Thank you, Satan.
Thank you, Satan. Yes, we can. Backwards is thank you, Satan.
You don't believe me? Google it.
We're going to leave you here with a little bit of Pissy Miles singing, I saw Daddy Blowing Santa Claus performed in her Christmas Wish show, a theatrical drag romp that is now going to be playing December 13th, 14th at the Triad in New York City. Check it out. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Last year, I had the most horrifying thing happen to me. I was laid in bed and I heard the most horrible sounds, lots of grunting and groaning and growling even. I snuck downstairs to see what was going on, and I saw the most horrible thing I've ever seen. I saw Daddy blowing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. They didn't see me there as Santa pulled on Daddy's hair, and Daddy called Saint Nicholas his naughty polar bear. Then I saw Daddy tickle Santa's balls underneath his pubes so snowy white. And it must have been a sin when he came on Daddy's chin, while Daddy